This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention took a bold step in a press briefing last Friday. For the first time, CDC officials announced that vaping some products containing THC are linked to over 800 reported lung diseases and roughly 12 deaths nationwide. Now, that does not mean that the THC caused the illnesses or even necessarily that the vapes did, but it is an important and troubling signal. The news comes as the results of the CDC's most recent investigation. In data collected from over 500 patients experiencing these lung illnesses, 77% of them reported having used those THC vaping products. And a lot of those affected vapers were kids. Now, in light of the growing public health concern, several states are taking action to regulate the use of vaping products or even to ban them altogether. I'm joined now in the studio by Sarah Overmall. She's drug and tobacco reporter for Politico. Sarah, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Dr. Michael Siegel is here, physician and professor of social and behavioral sciences, joining us from Boston University. Dr. Siegel, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Clifford Mitchell is here, director of the Environmental Health Bureau in the Maryland Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. Clifford, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
And we're talking about vaping and precautions consumers and politicians are taking to maybe make vaping safer, if you can do that. We'd love to hear from you as well. Share what you know about vaping. Comment on our Facebook page. You can always tweet us at 1A. The email address, 1A@WAMU.org. Well, Sarah, welcome back. There are a lot of confusing and conflating issues that have been flying around this issue of vaping. Let's make some distinctions here between vaping, youth vaping, which is illegal in most places or all places. We've heard about flavored vapes that are targeted at kids. Then there's legal products that I mentioned that contain THC, which is the psychoactive drug in marijuana, and potentially acute lung illnesses after people vape them. That's a lot of issues that in a lot of people's minds, I think, are all one thing. Can you help pull these apart a little bit?
Right. Yeah, there's a lot going on. And I think that they have been conflated, particularly by some politicians and even people at the state level that are making, like you said, these laws now about banning flavors or temporarily banning all e-cigarettes entirely. What is going on is that teen vaping has gone up over the past few years, but that's predominantly been things like Juul, which we've heard a lot about. But these lung illnesses this summer have largely been linked, as CDC said on Friday, to black market marijuana vapes. And the problem with those is that because they're federally illegal, it's very difficult for the government to come down on this and say, you know, this is how we can understand these better. This is how we can pull these products from the market. People have said, why hasn't the government recalled them? They're illegal in the first place. And so it's hard to even understand the baseline of what we're looking at here because there's so many different products out there and states have different rules towards them.
And why so many illegal black market, gray market products so accessible to so many people? I mean, there's a perception that this is basically a Wild West unregulated industry. Is that true? And if it's not true, why are so many tainted or clearly dangerous products able to make so many people sick?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's not quite a Wild West in some places, but the problem is with marijuana vapes, you have places like Colorado that has had cannabis legal for a few years now and does have a better structure around it. Then you have states that only recently legalized. And then you have things like CBD, which is a marijuana component that was recently made federally legal. And those products have flooded the market. And those are very popular because they're not psychoactive the same way that THC is. And so there's a lot of new products on the market. And then, of course, the federal illegality of it does make it really difficult to test these products, to study them. And even legal e-cigarettes are relatively recently on the market. So we don't really know too much about their long-term impact.
All right. Well, let's hear from some of the people who are living this directly. Vape shop owners like Fabi here, who feels that the conflation of reporting around vaping, whether it's e-cigarettes, THC marijuana vapes, TBD, as you mentioned, all these different products, some legitimate, some black market, is driving people toward a black market of clandestine vape purchases. Listen.
Hi, my name is Fabi, and I'm calling from San Diego, California. My husband and I have owned a vape shop for the last 6+ years, and we've helped over 10,000 people quit smoking during that time. We never allow children into our store. We card everybody. You have to be 18 and over if you're active duty or 21 and over otherwise. The hysteria around vaping right now is killing our business. We have people coming in literally every day talking about how they're going to have to go back to smoking. And it's just tragic that all of these people have made such a tremendous effort to improve their health, and the government is taking away something that is FDA regulated and replacing it with a choice between going back to smoking or going into the black market.
Dr. Michael Siegel, Fabi certainly has a business interest in this debate. I get it. But she talks about hysteria and that it's driving people away from a product that might be to the overall good. Does this count as hysteria in your mind? What's going on?
Absolutely. I think that Fabi is exactly right in terms of what's happening here. And what's basically happened is that the CDC has conflated two things, the respiratory disease outbreak and the problem of youth vaping. And there's no question that youth e-cigarette use is a problem. It is a public health problem, and we need to deal with it. But that is completely separate from what's happening with this respiratory disease outbreak that's affected now more than 800 people and caused 13 deaths. And as Sarah explained, this is caused by black market THC products. These are not electronic cigarettes that are being bought at stores like your Juul and other brands like that. This is not nicotine-containing e-liquids, which are water-based. This is being caused by black market THC products, which are oil-based. And the hallmark presentation of this disease is what's called a lipoid pneumonia, and that's caused by oil inhalation. And basically what's happening is that the oil is coating the lungs of these young people, and the lungs are unable to function. They're not designed to inhale any kind of oil. So I think that by conflating these two things, the CDC has led to many, you know, states passing really bad public policy, where rather than confronting directly the issue of illicit THC use and distribution, they're instead focusing on e-cigarettes that are sold at stores. And the net result is, number one, hundreds and hundreds of vape shops are going out of business, and number two, probably thousands of smokers who had already quit using these products are now going back to smoking, which is really a public health disaster.
And the issue of harm reduction is one I want to get to, and I want to talk about e-cigarettes versus regular old traditional dirty cigarettes and the hundreds of thousands of people they kill every year. But Clifford Mitchell, first to you, there is confusion in the public between acute lung illnesses, THC-containing products, the idea of vaping for adults, and the idea of using cotton candy and chocolate fudge flavors to attract children. You're in the state of Maryland. There's a law in Maryland called Tobacco 21. What's the perspective from where you are in the Department of Environmental and Health in Maryland?
Well, thanks very much. So in the health department, so let me just say a few things, Todd. The first is, as a physician, obviously I'm concerned about this. And I think as an environmental health and a health person, I do want to see if we can clear up some of the data a little bit. So the first thing is, I agree that there is confusion amongst many about which products we're talking about, but I do want to make clear, we are not sure that this is exclusively a problem with THC or marijuana products. Of the people who have been affected, 16% have reported that they only used nicotine-containing products. So while it may be true at this point that the majority are using products that are either cannabinoids or marijuana, it is not at this point clear what the actual problem or problems may be or causes of this problem, which is, I think, why the CDC, FDA, and states are taking a cautious approach rather than, for example, saying that we know the cause. At this point, we have not identified the single cause or causes, and at this point, there is not a product out there that we can say with complete certainty is safe. So I do want to be clear about this. I have a great deal of sympathy for the people who are trying to sort this out, but I think it is important to deal with the facts as we understand them. In Maryland, as you said, effective today, October 1st, in Maryland, you cannot buy nicotine or nicotine-containing products, cigarettes, et cetera, including vaping materials, if you are under the age of 21, except for active duty military personnel. And the goal there is to try to reduce tobacco usage overall. And that includes nicotine-containing products that have been marketed to young people through e-cigarettes. And that is something that we are doing in order to cut down on people moving from nicotine-containing products to tobacco, or indeed staying on nicotine-containing products if they never used them before. But I also do want to say that these illnesses, these pulmonary illnesses, the lung illnesses, are tremendously severe. These patients have been hospitalized and in some cases died. And in some cases, we don't know what the long-term effects are. So I really want to be cautious about saying that at this point, this is only a problem with THC or marijuana. And I don't think that I don't think we have the facts to support that yet.
All right. Got it. These are called adverse event reports. And all it really provides is a signal that something might be going on. It's not the same as doing a short term or even a long term study about the health effects of any product, a drug, a food or an electronic cigarette. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A. Sarah Overmull, that's the situation in Maryland, restricting sales of nicotine vapes, other vapes to 21, unless you're active duty military. How many other states are following suit, doing similar things?
Yeah, well, 14 states have passed some form of that law. Hundreds of municipalities have also done that. The Tobacco 21 movement has gained a lot of steam. There's even a bill in Congress sponsored by Mitch McConnell, who basically sets the calendar, so that means it'll be voted on, that would set the age federally to 21. So that's probably one of the more achievable things in this sort of reach to regulate tobacco and teen vaping. But there's a lot that has been done since then or talked about with banning all flavors. The president has even signaled he wants to do that. And again, I think it's because there's a lot of momentum behind this and conflating these two issues of teen vaping and these illnesses this summer and saying that we have these two problems. Let's kill two birds with one stone.
Even three problems. Teen vaping, youth vaping with flavors, THC vaping, and then the issue of vaping in the population at large, where millions and millions of people smoke cigarettes. And this is the issue of harm reduction that I want to make sure we get to. A lot of people are warning, hey, vaping may not be the best thing, probably not the best thing, but smoking is dangerous and smoking kills. And we've heard from a lot of listeners who've said that vaping for them has been effective in curtailing their use of dirty, cancer-causing, heart disease-causing regular old cigarettes. Here's Joseph.
My name's Joseph, and I live in Annapolis, Maryland, and vaping has changed my life. I smoked for 12 years. I started smoking at the age of 12, and I quit when I was 24. I do not think that banning these flavored products is a necessary action. I feel as if these vapor products save lives and have created a lot of small businesses and have helped out our community. And I really think that everyone should have the chance to switch.
Clifford Mitchell, he's getting at this concept of harm reduction. Cigarettes kill, they cause cancer, emphysema, obstructive lung disease. We know this. Americans are convinced of this, even if they smoke. And he says that if you curtail vaping, you're closing off an off-ramp for people to do something that might not be perfect, but it's probably less dangerous in the long term. Is that a good argument?
Well, so there is an argument that we do not want people to go back to smoking. I should point out, however, that there are actually a number of alternatives to smoking that have been demonstrated through scientific studies and medical studies to be quite effective in terms of getting people off of cigarettes, which do not involve vaping. And they include, for example, nicotine supplements. They include quitlines. They include a number of other things that have been shown to be both effective in individuals and populations. And Maryland and many other states make available these techniques, patches, other medications, as part of a comprehensive program to get people off of cigarettes or tobacco. So vaping is not only not the only alternative to smoking. It, in fact, has not been demonstrated to the extent that these other modalities have been shown to be effective in getting people off of cigarettes. So I think it's not quite accurate to say that those are the only two alternatives.
Michael, a disturbing trend line that I saw, youth smoking goes down, 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 down over the last 20 years. And then there's a spike. There's a spike in the last 2 years, and it's e-cigarettes. You've studied youth vaping. What can you tell us?
Well, first of all, I would describe the trend as being a sharp decline in youth smoking. And youth smoking doesn't go up. Vaping goes up. Mm. And I think that's a critical distinction because this is a tremendous success story, the fact that youth smoking has dropped to such, you know, dramatically low levels. And vaping has actually, I think, accelerated the decline in smoking. Vaping culture has really replaced the smoking culture. And that's what's cool among, you go into the high schools, that's what's cool today, not smoking. And there's a concern by a number of health groups that vaping is actually going to be a gateway to smoking. And I think that's just not true. I don't think the evidence supports that. And I don't think that that's what's going on. I think it's actually turning kids away from smoking and replacing it with something that's just different. So I don't see this as being undermining the progress we've made. I think it's just a separate issue that needs to be dealt with. But I think it's important to point out that the youth vaping needs to be balanced against the benefits of vaping for adult smokers who are trying to quit. And although one might say that there are other options out there, I think it's important to point out that these options are actually not quite effective. I wouldn't describe them as being effective. I'd describe them as being miserable. Mm. Because only 10% of people who try to quit smoking with these methods like the nicotine patch are successful. 90% fail. And to me, that's not acceptable. I mean, that's not an effective treatment. If I went to the doctor with pneumonia and said, he gave me an antibiotic and I said, what are the chances this would work? And he said, oh, well, there's a 10% chance. I would say, that's malpractice.
All
that's
right, Michael Siegel, treatment. Michael Siegel, Dr. Michael Siegel, hold the line there. We're going to continue this discussion. Clifford Mitchell, we're going to let you go, Director of Environmental Health Bureau in the Maryland Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. Clifford, I want to thank you for joining us. And more to come, we're going to take more of your questions. We're going to tease out this idea of adult vaping versus getting children on board with flavored vapes and a representative of the vaping industry. Stay close. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is 1A. Well, now back to our conversation about vaping. I want to add another voice to the conversation. Tony Abood is Executive Director of the Vapor Technology Association. Tony, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you guys again.
Your perspective now, there are a lot of issues to tease out. We can't get to all of them in one statement. I want to talk about kids, and I want to talk about this specific idea of flavored vapes that don't have anything to do with helping adults quit or getting adults a little bit high on a THC product, but getting kids on board. Mm-hmm. What's your perspective with flavored vapes? Are you willing to go along with the ban? Are these products appropriate for children?
Well, let me start by saying, look, we are parents too, right? And in fact, I have three teens. So I deal with this issue every day, just like I deal with alcohol, just like we as parents, we deal with drugs, just like as parents, we deal with sex. And education and constant talking is absolutely essential to the whole conversation. But I just want to take issue with what you said. You are making the statement that all flavors are designed for kids. And that is in fact just not a correct statement.
It doesn't have to be all. Let's talk about most. Let's talk about cotton candy or sour cherry. Lots and lots of flavors out there. You're just not going to convince me, Tony. It may not have to be all. Forget about all. These flavors are targeted at kids.
Yeah. So the way you deal with this, with the criticism that industry is marketing to youth, is you roundly and solidly address marketing issues, which is what we have been proposing. In fact, last Monday, we put out a major policy statement identifying 11 different material steps that you can do including limiting some of these flavors names, because that is the marketing shtick that people have been complaining about. And to the point that Dr. Siegel made earlier, you have to have a balance in this discussion. And if adults are telling you that they actually rely upon flavors like cotton candy, or they rely upon sweet cherry, or they rely upon black raspberry, whatever it is, that cannot be discounted in the overall analysis. So
Tony, should these products be on the market? Black cherry, sour blackberry, cotton candy. We can go down the list all day of how delicious they are. Should these things be on the market? Should adults don't need them. Kids love them. Maybe we should take care of part two.
Well, I think, again, you're making an inaccurate statement. What kids tell you is that they like the idea of vaping. It has become cool, right? They don't tell you that flavors. In fact, in the survey data, flavors are like the third or fourth reason down the list that this product even is interesting to them. But our point is that you can directly address that issue without ripping the flavors out of the market that the adults are relying upon. You've got 10 million adult consumers that are relying upon this product, many of them to quit smoking for the first time. The flavors are something that they repeatedly tell you is what keeps them interested. And the danger here is that if all you make available to them, assuming you even allow e-cigarettes to remain, all you make available to them are tobacco, well, that's the very flavor that they are trying to escape from. That's the flavor that they've been locked into for cigarette smoking all these years.
I hear you. Dr. Siegel just told us specifically that there may be some benefits to vapes being on the market, that vapes, for a 19-year-old, it's better to be, if you want to be cool, it's better to be cool with a vape than cool with a cigarette, if they see that as cool, but that it is a lousy step down from cigarettes, that the data show that adults who are addicted to tobacco actually don't effectively quit with vapes.
Well, actually, that is actually not true. The New England Journal of Medicine actually published a report, and directly contradicting what Dr. Mitchell said earlier, that said vaping products have been proven to be at least twice as successful at helping adult smokers quit smoking as any of the traditional gum, lozenge, and patch. So the mere and let's be really clear, this is not an open question. In England, they have now adopted e-cigarettes as one of their primary tools for helping adults quit smoking. They've opened vape shops with flavored e-liquids and flavored e-cigarettes inside the National Health Service hospitals, and on top of that, the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine in our country have already said, as has the FDA, that completely switching people from cigarettes to e-cigarettes will be a net benefit for public health. There's no question about the potential and the significant harm reduction that this segment can provide. And what is amazing about the conversation today is that no longer are people talking about the smokers and how smoking is killing over 1,300 people every single day in this country.
Tony, before I let you go, talk to me about the Vaping Technology Association a little bit. I know you represent vape shops, owners, probably industry as well. They certainly have a right to have their voice heard like anybody else who's in business. Do you have a PAC? Do you associate with a PAC? Do you give money to politicians? How are you wielding power in the debate?
Well, first of all, we represent the entire segment of this industry, from manufacturers down to retailers. And what is important about that is that this is a new industry segment that has grown up. This is not traditional tobacco. This is not the cigarette company's distribution chain. And these are certainly not the cigarette company's outlets for selling products. These are independent vape shop owners, and there are close to 12,000 of them all across the country. Many of them are former smokers who finally quit after years of banging their head into the wall with the FDA-approved products and failing. They finally quit with flavored e-cigarettes, and they have now started their own businesses to help others do exactly the same thing. The way we wield power in this debate is by communicating very clearly on what is important in terms of policy. like I said, we put out 11 policy steps last Monday that outline all of the different things that can be done that we've been advocating for that Congress has not yet done and that states have not yet done to keep these products out of the hands of kids, to keep these products from appealing to kids. But a wholesale removal of flavors is really using a sledgehammer when you could actually use much more of a scalpel to actually address the issue.
All right, Tony, what about where the rubber meets the road in politics? Do you have a PAC? Are you providing money to campaigns?
No, we don't engage in a PAC. We do not have a PAC.
Gotcha.
And but we are engaging directly with policymakers at all levels because they need to understand that simply removing flavors will eliminate this ecosystem of companies that are not cigarette companies, that are not tobacco companies. And these are the small businesses all across America that are employing tens of thousands, over 100,000 employees. That is what is at risk here in crafting a policy. We can walk and chew gum in this country, is my belief.
Gotcha. Tony Abboud is Executive Director of the Vapor Technology Association. Tony, thank you for being on, for sharing your views and the views of the industry. We appreciate it. We've gotten some responses from our 1A listeners. Ross tweets, how about just not intentionally inhaling any sort of smoke or vapor or any kind for any reason that could be damaging to delicate lung tissue? Chris emailed to say, to me, it sounds like the main issue is we don't know the short term or the long term impacts of vaping, regardless of what product is being used while vaping. We need more research on the impacts of vaping. Sarah, we saw the president in the Oval Office a couple weeks ago talking about a ban on these flavored vapes. Don't get kids on board. The First Lady has a son, along with me, who's 11 or 12. This issue is personal to her and personal to us. That was an announcement. What has happened in terms of policy? What is the FDA doing?
Right. Well, there's two things that are happening. The FDA released the draft of its rule for requiring every one of these products to go through review. It's worth noting that that was always going to happen. The industry was, in a sense, always going to have a reckoning because none of these products have been reviewed by the FDA. But what happened separately that caught a few people by surprise was Trump saying that in the coming weeks, there will be an all-out flavor ban and that none of these products will be allowed back on market until they go through an FDA review. What's most controversial within that is that, you know, I think a lot of policymakers agree that there should not be black cherry and cotton candy and those things on the market, but the battleground is going to be mint and menthol because in the most recent youth survey, it showed that those were very popular flavors among teens. The problem is that they're also very popular among adults, and menthol cigarettes are still on the market. So when we talk about this spectrum of risk, a lot of people argue that adult smokers should have menthol and mint vapes available to them, especially when there's more dangerous products out there too.
I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A. Dr. Michael Siegel, you've been waiting patiently. One of the big issues hanging over this entire debate, and we've heard it raised a couple of times, cigarettes are dangerous, cigarettes are bad. Vaping probably is safer. So over the long term, if you're vaping, you're probably better off than cigarettes. But here's the key question. Do we know that? Do we have a way of knowing that? Vaping's only been popular for 2 or 3 years.
So I think we do. I mean, I think that there have been enough clinical studies and toxicologic studies that we can say definitively that vaping is safer than smoking, or that electronic cigarette use is safer than smoking. I mean, tobacco smoke has over 10,000 chemicals in it, over 60 known carcinogens. We know it kills more than 400,000 people a year. And if you look at the aerosol that's produced by electronic cigarettes, it has a small number of chemicals, some of which are of potential concern, but nothing like tobacco smoke. So we know that it's safer. The question is that we don't know the long-term effects. We know that vaping causes acute respiratory irritation, and it causes some effects on the blood vessels acutely. What we don't know is if you were to vape for a long time, for many, many, many years, decades, could it potentially cause chronic lung or heart disease? But we do know that whatever causes in the long term is not going to be anywhere as bad as cigarette smoking.
So toxicologically, we know that if you run vape mist versus cigarette smoke through a machine, vape mist has fewer toxins. That suggests it's safer, but doesn't it take a generation of millions of people using to actually know how safe or dangerous a product like this really is?
No, I mean, I think that you can, just from the toxicology, you can tell whether or not a product is highly toxic, and you can get a sense of the relative toxicity. To be able to, you know, clearly define the exact risk, of course, you would need to wait until, you know, the product has been on the market for decades. But, you know, look, this is the way we regulate drugs in this country. If we waited for 20 or 30 years before we allowed any drug on the market, before we were sure that it was safe, we would literally have no pharmaceuticals on the market today.
Sure. Except pharmaceuticals have a health benefit, and that's why you put them on the market, because they do some demonstrable good. With cigarettes and vapes, it's, I guess you call it recreational, hard to demonstrate the demonstrable good that makes the risk worth it. Well, I want to give a voice to an anonymous listener who emailed us this. I vape THC products. I use them medicinally, and I get them from a medical dispensary. Finding vaping has been a godsend both for my condition and my lifestyle, but I've been very concerned with everything I've been hearing lately. I'm trying to figure out if what I use is safe or not, and what symptoms I should be on the lookout for in regards to these lung diseases. I'm looking for information, and I think Sarah, this person who emailed us is not alone. It's a confusing environment, and before we go, I want you to give us a sense of how this debate is shaking out. Anytime someone in this country says ban or curtail with a product that's worth billions, the influencers come out, the lobbyists come out. Mitch McConnell has a national limit for age 21. Mitch McConnell's from Kentucky, and I'm sure he's happy to help the cigarette industry. That's just a guess. How is this debate now shaping up now that it's about real money?
Yeah, that's a good question, because again, of course, there's always a lot of players in this. I think the president's comments gave cover to a lot of Republicans who maybe would not have taken the stance before that we need to be harsher on this industry. But also, a lot of these e-cigarette companies are owned by big tobacco. Mm. And so they
have both ends of this covered.
Right, exactly. They do have the money to throw at this, but they also know how to play it. And one thing that is interesting is that a lot of people like Tony Abboud at the Vapor Technology Association are kind of trying to go up against this and say that these bans are going to be destructive to an entire industry. They've even sued New York over their ban. But these major companies like Juul and these other tobacco companies are saying, we're ready to work with the FDA. Tell us what you need from us. The thing to note there is that those companies have the resources to do that. And so whatever comes next, I think what we can safely say is this time next year, there's going to be hundreds of vaping products that are no longer on the market anymore.
You know, it's interesting. For decades and decades and generations, the cigarette industry resisted all regulation. And then once it became clear that more stringent regulation was coming, not only youth advertising, but state tobacco settlements, all of a sudden, Altria, the big companies, were very much on board with regulations that can set the tone for everybody. This has happened before.
Right. And they know how to work within them. And so I think a few of the things we're going to see from the get-go will be advertising will stop. And then we're going to talk about these flavor bans. A lot less options are going to be on the market. I think that's just a reality. This time next year, we might see some states pulling back on those so-called bans, though.
I think it's clear, though, that vaping for adults is not going to go away. There may be fewer flavors. Kids may have fewer options. Cotton candy might not be around anymore. But adults, don't worry. Your vapes will still be around. I'm confident in that as well. Sarah Overmalt, drug and tobacco reporter for Politico. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you.
Dr. Michael Siegel, doctor and professor of social and behavioral sciences at Boston University, the School of Public Health. Dr. Siegel, very enlightening. I appreciate you being with us.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Remember, you can subscribe to 1A's podcast on the NPR One app or whatever app you like. We'd love it if you would write us a review once you get that app, because the reviews make a big difference. That's why we harp on it. You'll find all the links to listen at npr.org/1A. This conversation was produced by Stacia Brown. To learn more about her and the rest of the great staff, visit the website, the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for being with us and for listening. This is 1A.